Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal.
And a goal. Sensational. And it's there by Jenkins.
Delay.
Joel Petrol again. Would you believe it?
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name's Matt Messiaen and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burdell to reflect on Sunday's late FA Cup heartbreak against Southampton. First thing first though, how are you guys doing? How do you feel generally about the FA Cup? Are you fans of the FA Cup or not so much? Let's start with you, Tom.
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I love the FA Cup because I'm 31 years old and we've done quite well historically in it in that time. I was thinking about this yesterday when I was at the game. I've been to 3 semi-finals as a Watford fan in the FA Cup, which I think in a kind of course of 20-odd years is not bad going, really. And when you watch the highlights and read coverage of it, you hear about these teams that have not made it out of the third round or beyond the fourth round. You think, blimey, that's a decent-sized club. Mm. So actually, I think we're quite spoiled and that feeds into my enjoyment of it. All that said, and I'm sure we'll get onto it, the draw doesn't exactly fill me with excitement.
Mm. How about you then, Jordan? Are you a fan of the FA Cup or could you do without it?
No, I think I'm pretty much exactly the same as Tom there. You know, same age, I've been to the same number of semis and obviously finals as well. And it's been, I don't know, I think there's been a few seasons where we've done reasonably well in the Cup in quite obscure, mediocre seasons too. So it's given you a little bit of life in terms of the season as a whole. So no, I do enjoy it. And I mean, I can't really add or disagree with too much that Tom said there. What about you, Matt? Are you kind of on the same? You're a little bit older than us. Maybe any other Cup runs in there you can remember from the from 1990 perhaps?
To be fair, I didn't really get involved until kind of like 98, 99, so.
I think they did better in the League Cup in the 90s, didn't they? There was a year when they played and beat Leeds when they were champions of England. And I feel
I don't remember that.
Either beat or lost. I mean, those are the two outcomes of football typically, aren't they? But
we've got a slightly older section of fans listening to this right now just cringing and scratching their eyes out at this.
I know.
Yeah, we should steer across.
We have. Well, you know what? I love the FA Cup. I think that it gives you a lot of options, not just, you know, the fact that generally tickets are a little bit cheaper. Because the club wants people to come in and people sometimes steer away from the Cup. So tickets are a bit cheaper, which means that more fans can come, people that perhaps wouldn't have normally been able to see the game, get a chance to watch the team that they enjoy. You get to see a lot of the time players who are on the fringes. So you get a chance to see how they're doing and if they weren't a star in the league. And you get to play interesting teams that you wouldn't normally face, which is why I think all of us generally dislike an FA Cup game when you're playing against a team in your own division because you're like, oh, God.
It's more of the same.
Fine.
Yeah, we had a few. I feel like we've had quite a few of those too.
I honestly believe you shouldn't be allowed to draw.
I'd be up for that rule, Tom. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that at all. And actually, I'd also add into that and say, if you are drawing a team against your own league, you don't have to have a replay. The game is finished on the day. Because it doesn't benefit anyone, does it, really?
No, I think you should just be allowed to agree it. with the opponent ahead of time. Just say no, we don't want to replay extra time and pens, or even skip extra time and go to pens.
Yeah.
Would you rather a straight up no replays at all?
No, because I think it would really harm the clubs, particularly the lower division teams, who really would rely on that kind of income that they could get from having an away fixture, yeah, or your home fixture against one of these big clubs. You know, they get another chance to do it again if they get to that, and it's kind of a reward. The replay is a reward, whereas for teams in the same division, the replay is not a reward at all. I mean, even if you had like a National League team that was playing another National League team, they probably wouldn't want to have that game again, because it's, you know, they've got games to get done. They're not getting from that anything from that game. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite agree.
Well, thanks for joining us in this week's episode of the Watford Buzz.
Yeah, yeah.
We hate the FA Cup, even though
No. We do love it. And I mean, look, the game Maidstone United played out. I watched that one, and I really enjoyed watching that. And you know, how well did they do to get past Ipswich?
Proper FA Cup stuff, that, wasn't it? I watched the first hour before I went out and watched the Boreham Woods game, and Maidstone just did the classic cup shock thing, didn't they? They weathered the storm. Ipswich hit the post, they hit the bar, deflected over, keeper made some saves, and they got two goals from their only two shots and won the game. Fantastic story, given where they've been and had to reform and play in, you know, county level stuff. So phenomenal.
Yeah. However, Watford, unfortunately, weren't able to conjure up as much delight. Although I would argue that the first half was probably one of the better first halves that I've seen from a Watford performance-wise this season. What did you make of Watford, Jordan?
Yeah, I was quite impressed, actually. You know, I think we knew kind of roughly what Southampton were going to be trying to do to us. You can choose how you approach that. But we've seen Ismail take on a team that's going to be a little bit more dominant previously. And we showed signs of being able to kind of play that slightly more compact counter-attacking side and look to break in that way. But it was never quite as consistent. But I thought yesterday was really, really quite good. You know, we looked comfortable. And I'd say, you know, arguably we were the more effective of the two teams. You know, Southampton had a lot of the ball, but it weren't particularly threatening. However, I thought we looked quite comfortable out of possession, which I can't really say. I've not been able to say too many times in recent years as a Watford fan. We've looked comfortable and we play a little bit deeper, drop off the ball. And then we've tried it quite often, especially in the Premier League, and it's never really looked that that convincing. But I have to say it did, and I think the work rate of the team was really good. I think, you know, you look at the wingers, were both quite active defensively. They're getting back. Martins, I thought, had a really good game defensively, as well as breaking forwards too. Same with the Yasser Asprilla when he was kind of popping up on the left-hand side, that really good there as well. And yeah, just quite unfortunate in a lot of ways. But I think the team is going to take quite a lot from that, and having different ways you can play, different options is obviously important. But that was a good performance. I think the head coach is probably going to be pretty happy on the whole with the performance. The result, obviously, as we kind of discussed, is not ideal, but yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, Tom, both teams made the changes for this one. I think Southampton probably more so than Watford, but do you think this was a game that was decided really from the substitutions?
Yeah, this is the prevailing kind of narrative in the analysis, isn't it? Southampton made 9 changes, I think it was, and I have to admit there are a couple of lads that they started with that I hadn't even heard of before. Magoma at left back and Dibbling. You know, not pretending to know every player ever, but I'd never heard of them. And then they brought on Stuart Armstrong, Adam Armstrong, and a couple of others. And I think that turned the tide at the time that we were bringing in Ken Semmer, who's been out for a while with injury, Emmanuel Dennis, who obviously hasn't played a lot of football, James Morris, who hasn't played a vast amount of football either, Porteous, who form-wise, you know, up and down. And I think it was clear that, you know, they came in 22 unbeaten and they were pretty desperate to keep that run going, weren't they? Even if it was at the expense of a replay. So, yeah, I think it probably did decide on those changes, because for a long period, I think, as Jordan said, I think we were, you know, fairly comfortable. It felt like they had a reasonable amount of the ball, Southampton, but they didn't create great clear-cut chances. Certainly the XG, according to Flash Score, was pretty close. So, yeah, it wasn't a case of us taking a battering or anything like that, but they got deeper and deeper, and Southampton kind of territorially crept up the pitch and the pressure was on. And I think that was also a result of bringing on the extra centre-half. Porteous, you know, you don't necessarily have that outlet. You, from a mentality point of view, it's much more defensive, and they kind of maybe smelt a little bit of blood.
Yeah. As we mentioned, Tom, we started the better of the two teams, and then we got given a free kick. And I don't think anyone was really, you know, expecting much, but Martin steps up and scores what was probably, I don't know, what, the first free kick we scored. How long has it been since we scored a free kick?
There was the other Masson one against Cardiff, wasn't there? And then there was one more recently too.
There was one more between that, wasn't there? Because there was that big hoo-ha when they scored the Cardiff one about how long it had been since we had scored a free kick. But I'm sure we've scored one in the interim as well. I certainly didn't have Mateus Martins down as free kick taker, but it was a really clever one. And actually it was fairly well lined up in front of me. I was in the lower GT for a change, and towards that end. And it was, you know, it was lovely. And I kind of got a sense that he might do that, because it was all kind of set up and prepared, the wall and Joe Lumley, that is, for him to go to the other side. So it was a really nicely executed goal. And actually, I just saw this now, both the goals were kind of wrong-footing the keeper, weren't they? Ball going low into that corner. But if that's another string to his bow, then great, because he could be a bit more or a bit less wasteful at times. So by, yeah, cutting in and shooting, as we know. So, yeah, no, it was a nice goal.
That's really bothering me now, who this last free kick was. I think I did see something along the lines of that was the last free kick we scored at home since 2016.
Oh, wow.
Or the first free kick we scored at home since 2016. But I just swear there was one. Oh, was it Imran Loser at Blackpool?
Of course. Yes.
That's right. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, what do you think about the one-man wall from Southampton? Was that a bit, even this in the kind of build-up to the free kick, it looked a little suspect.
Quite close to only have one man, wasn't it?
Seemed,
it
just gives the keeper a little bit more to do, didn't it?
I didn't notice it at the time, but I've seen there's some discussion since.
Yeah, it seemed like a mistake from their part. And, you know, when they got a free kick, you could see that we'd, I don't know if it was part of the plan or not, but we'd certainly made sure our wall was aligned and full of bodies.
What I would say is there's been some debate before, and I'm sure it'll come up again in the future, about the benefit of walls at free kicks, and are they actually hindering keepers more than they're aiding them? You know, these days you see the kind of primary wall, the secondary wall, the attacking team putting bodies in the way, the draft excluder. Is there an argument to say in certain situations, a 20-yard shot, you're more likely to save it, this being the exception that proves this rule, if you get a clear view of it in the first place?
I think my argument would be against that is if you have no wall, the trajectory of the ball can be so much different. You can strike it so much cleaner, can't you? You can just have like a real power-driven shot, which then maybe just makes it, I don't know, I don't want to be the team to test it out, but it's an interesting question. Clearly that was the worst of both worlds for Southampton there, because it just was enough to change the site a little bit, but also just not really scramble across. It was poor setup, poor defence, and just kind of the opportunity we needed. It felt like it coming kind of prior to that, we obviously it was very early on, but you could see there was a little bit of fragility there. And you know, I think obviously the free kicks are a direct free kick we scored from, but set pieces in general, I thought actually kind of, again, for the first time in a long time, I can say I felt that like they were kind of our biggest threat at times.
They were certainly beating the first man, weren't they? There was a few that came in and I thought, go on then, get on that. And they either didn't, or the contact was poor, but I don't think it was the delivery. I think it was, you know, the timing of the jumper or the player attacking it. But no, I agree with you. It felt like we were more of a threat than normal.
I think, as you said, the delivery is really good, looked more consistent, but also the movement of the players. You know, we talked in the last podcast about, you know, what are we doing? What are we doing with this offensive set piece taking, and are we trying to, you know, find ways to get through on goal a little bit more and get shots away? You know, we talked about the change in, or the hiring of a set piece coach. And I think this game really started to see it coming together a little bit. We've got maybe a guy that we can count on a little bit more to get the ball in Shafatadze. But the movement, there's one in particular, the Sirialta header, that he really should have scored from at 1-0. in front of the Southampton fans there, but you can see just looking at that one play, you know, there's good movement. There's obviously clear patterns and assignments there. You've got some blocking going on with Martins, and it's a nice little routine, which really, you know, the ball's dropped right on the edge of the six yard box in the center of the goal. And it should be a relatively easy header for someone like Sirianni to put away there. But again, it's an indicator. And it felt like if we could continue doing that and just kind of building that a little bit more, you know, we've got some of the tools, some of the pieces there. We can actually start making this a threat in our game and a potential kind of match winner in this situation as well.
Tom, at the beginning of the season, Chakvatadze was, chomping at the bit to get on, and he was only really playing a bit part role. And, you know, there were reports saying that he was disappointed the amount of time that he had. And slowly he's got more time, and he's kind of earned that time that he's now in a position where is he, you know, one of those first names on the team sheet type roles, or is he not quite there yet? What do you think?
No, I definitely think he is. I think that's the first time I've seen him for any length of time in person rather than just on telly. I was really, really impressed with him. I thought he was a menace. I thought he moved the ball really quickly. He was always very kind of aware of his surroundings and quite sort of press resistant. The link up between him, Asprilla and Jamal Lewis down that left hand side, the little sort of triangle, little trio that they were, you know, a lot of our threat I felt came through that. He was tenacious out of possession as well, and that impressed me. So yeah, I really just backed up a lot of what I feel like I've seen in the last few weeks on Hive Live and on television in person. So I was really, really impressed by him, and I'd be very interested to know what the option, obligation, or if there's anything in the loan that kind of favours us in terms of making that permanent, because and what kind of fee we'd be talking about. Because I think if we're in the Championship next season, which I suspect in all likelihood we will be, then I would like to see him back.
Real engine as well, doesn't he? He was tireless, I thought, in pretty much every game he plays. Just never stops. He doesn't really look particularly fatigued by the end of it either. He's a good athlete, and I think the point you touched on right at the beginning there, that awareness, that positional awareness, but just kind of that sense of space. One of those players that just kind of so easily dribbles across the defender just to make it, you know, more awkward, like we see of Asprilla. Even in the build up to the free kick, we saw that from Yasser Asprilla too. And those two players are the two guys you look to for that real technical coordination and quality that they possess, and the free kick we won all came from that presence of mind of Asprilla and the ability to kind of execute that run forward from the left-hand side, which is the first time I've really seen him from the left and felt overly positive about it. You know, I think he generally looks more comfortable when he cuts inside from the right and has that space open up. I thought he was really effective, more direct. And you know, you bring Chakvatadze in there, and also, as you say, Jamal Lewis offering you something from the left too, and it starts to look a really, really threatening little unit that you can occupy that space with. A little bit of a quieter game for Kone in the first half, though, I thought, and he came alive a bit in the second. But was I right in thinking that first half was probably Kone's quieter game for a while?
I felt like I didn't really notice him, I must admit.
Yeah, I thought so.
You start to get a bit more involved the second half, you know, kind of he kind of see that ranginess. He looks a bit more confident in possession still, which is good to see. Like, he picked the ball up in deeper places and play it forward where he perhaps wouldn't have done at the start of the season. He's still got that in him. By no means a bad game. I think the second half he looked a lot better. You know, started driving into space and taking control of the ball a little bit more. But you know, you talk about Chakvatadze being a potential first name on the team sheet. I think he's definitely put his name in the hat to kind of get that spot. But it's nice to think that we do have some pretty good options there now. You know, we ended the game with Tom Ince in the central position, which was a little bit questionable. But with Kambi, you know, coming back to fitness hopefully soon, you know, I know it's a player or a position we've identified we could do with some help in potentially. But I do quite like the options we have if they can stay fit. You know, we've got some variety in there. And in a game like this, just the kind of the flexibility of the players in general, I think, was quite positive to see us switch mentality and be more passive defensively. You know, normally we're pressing a little higher, being a little bit more aggressive higher up the pitch. But this one, we kind of switched focus, and the players really kind of took to it quite well. So you have to credit the coaching staff as well for kind of utilizing these players, but also actually focusing them to play in these different styles. It was pretty good.
Another really good game from Ryan Andrews, Tom.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent. Again, he quickly just looks like someone we're going to end up selling for a few million this summer or next summer, whenever it is. I just can't see a world in which we hold on to him forever. He's obviously eye-catching in his pace and the fact that he gets forward and gets shots off and stuff and is involved in attacking moves, but I think that often comes at the expense of the defensive side of things with quick fullbacks, wingbacks, doesn't it? And I think he's good and in continuing to improve in that sense as well. So it was a really good all-round game from him. I just hope we can cling on to him for a little bit longer and enjoy him while we got him.
Perhaps a little surprising to see him in the FA Cup game. You've thought he might have been one that was rested.
There's no one else, is there?
Bashiru was injured.
Because Tom Dele Bashiru was missing completely, wasn't he? Was it hamstring or something?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know who would be the next man up in that position.
Good point. It's the sort of game where you need to have, you know, a few youth players who can step up, but I don't even know who that would be. Who is the right back for the under-23s? Anyone know?
I'm not even sure who's playing there right now. I mean, you if he's fit to play, you know, just play him. We've got a little bit of time to turn around, obviously, in a couple of days, I guess. But I know what you're saying. But he did have a good game, though, again. I think he's starting to look more and more comfortable, isn't he? You know, the thing I'd love to see him just improve on just a bit is if he does get that space to drive forward, just get a little bit more confidence in taking that shot across goal. He kind of drags it a little bit, underhits a little bit. We saw it away at Plymouth. Obviously, he ended up scoring in that game, but he's not quite confident there just yet. You know, he dragged it wide at Plymouth, didn't he? And he kind of, well, there's one time, sorry, where he had the opportunity to shoot and he kind of laid it off, and you've got his teammates screaming at him, have a shot, you know, take it on. And I think he could be really effective and become an actual goal threat if he's able to do that a little bit more consistently. Obviously, that's kind of one of the last things you're looking to improve now on a fullback. But it's an area of his game I think he's going to get more chances. You know, as he kind of gets better and more comfortable in that right back position, he obviously knows he can get back and defend. He's going to get more license to go forward. I'm sure Ismail's going to like his ability to do that more and more. I'm expecting to have more chances. So he's a real promising player, and I'm looking forward to seeing. He's kind of one of the main ones you look to kind of watch that development over the next season or two and kind of see where he ends up. But really good.
Sticking in defence, Matty Pollock was handed a rare start in the wake of news that came out in the Watford Observer saying that he's submitted a transfer request. It's an odd one there, actually, because he arguably gave his best performance of the season, and he doesn't really want to be here anymore, is seemingly what the reports are. So how are we feeling about that, Tom?
Feel a little bit for Matty Pollock because he's essentially been tarred with the brush of that performance at Millwall, which no one covered themselves in glory. And so to pick out a young lad making his first championship start, I think is particularly harsh. And to be honest with you, apart from a couple of cup games, we usually go out of the League Cup very early, and a few kind of sub appearances in the league here and there when they're trying to block it up in the final 10 minutes as he tried to do against Southampton, we haven't really seen a lot to judge him on. And I think people are very quick to criticise, but less quick to hand out praise. But I think he was really, really, really good yesterday. Did all the basics really well. He was, you know, full-blooded in the challenge, won his aerial duels, right place at the right time. And also one little thing I noticed, because again, it happened kind of right in front of me, was towards the end showing a bit of kind of game awareness and leadership in that was telling the ball boy to just slow it down, don't give the ball back so quickly, etc., as we were trying to see out a 1-0 win at that point. So only a small thing, but I really like him. And I think it's less a case of him wanting to not be at Watford, but be somewhere where he's going to play. I suppose we're already deep enough in the FA Cup that anyone that we're likely to sell him to isn't in the cup, so it doesn't matter that he's played and he's cup tied. But I think, you know, he would have given Ismail food for thought yesterday.
Yeah, with Porteous and Serrauta not really having nailed down that spot next to Hoot, could Pollock play a big role, providing that he decides to stay, for the remainder of the season?
I don't see why not. You know, I think, look, we're late enough in the window right now. There was talk of us being interested in the centre-back at one point. I don't think we can really afford to lose a centre-back and not bring one in. Personally, I'd be going with the more known quantity of Pollock. You know, he's obviously ingrained in the system. He knows what's expected. He's been around the team for quite a while now. He's shot in this game. I thought, I agreed with you too, I thought he was really good. Obviously keeping it pretty simple, which I don't think is a bad thing for a young defender coming into the team like as he was, especially in a game, you know, you're off the ball, you have to kind of maintain that focus for long periods. And I think, you know, maybe in some ways it suits him being in more of a passive side. I think it'd be interesting to see him play a game where we're a little bit higher up the pitch, you know, controlling the ball a little bit more and see how he can impact the team there and maybe a bit more of an exposing position for him. but really positive performance. You know, and he did hand his transfer request, as the Watford Observer reported. But, you know, he's making the team make a decision. He might just feel that he's uncertain on what the situation is. And the team can, you know, there's nothing stopping us saying, okay, well, this is what we have to offer you, and seeing if we can come to some solution there. I think this might be the first taste of that, possibly. You know, if he feels like he's actually got a chance to play, I don't think, you know, maybe he's not opposed to staying here if he thinks there's a genuine opportunity. So far, he just hadn't really had that, had he? So it was good to see. But as you mentioned there, Matt, it's not like Sirialta and Porteous have been kind of like outstanding in that position. I think, you know, we know the issues with Porteous, and I think Sirialta has been below his standards at centre back when he's come in there recently. So he's given us a good problem to have, and I'm interested to see how we deal with it. I would be quite surprised if he was to leave now, though, personally. I also thought it was one of Wesley Hoot's better games as well. Obviously, the use of the ball is something you identify always. You know, when he's having a good game, you look at those raking passes across the pitch and so on. But I thought he looked more composed yesterday, much sturdier defensively. You know, he looked composed, controlled, got across, made some good challenges, but also reading the game well, good positioning. Again, same as Pollock, stayed focused, stayed in control, and was able to be quite successful there. And yeah, I think most of us kind of feel a little 50-50 on Hoot, but if he can play that more consistently, then we've got a good defender there. And just wanted to kind of point out that, give him a little bit of praise too, which, you know, a game that we talk about the performance here, and we obviously disappointing result, but really been, even just talking about the individual, has been a lot of positives so far. Was there anyone that really stood out as not being involved, not playing particularly well?
Tom Ince, maybe, when he came on, didn't?
Yeah, Tom Ince is the other one who came in for quite a bit of criticism, isn't he? But I don't think he's Matt Sharp, obviously. That's not particularly controversial to say. Brought in an unfamiliar position, wasn't he? So I'm not entirely surprised and sort of asked to do an unfamiliar job. So, yeah, a little bit hard on him. And he probably falls into that category of players that Val, you know, said we were using, but they weren't fit. It's got kind of move away this summer written all over it, I think, hasn't it? If not before, because I know there's been some links with a switch to Turkey.
I think the issue with Ince is that he's on quite a large contract, isn't he? And that money could be better used elsewhere if he's not going to feature much for the team.
I don't know exactly what he's on. I don't know if it's really known what he's on, though. I think a lot of it's assumption, isn't it? I'm not entirely sure. But in terms of bad, I don't think there are particularly any bad performances. As you say, there's been some talk about Tom Ince. There were questions over Dan Backman's involvement in the equaliser. Are we ready to talk about the equaliser yet, or...?
Yeah, let's talk about the equaliser then. Jordan, you made a point that was actually brought up on a couple of podcasts, actually. I think both From the Rookery End and Do Not Scratch Your Eyes quoted yourself. I might be half right there. But they said that, hey, Mr. Watford Analytics said that it was a good goal and it wasn't Backman's fault. So now's your chance to back up yourself, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just think it's a really well taken goal. You know, if you're going to criticise any, and I don't think you can be too strong on the criticism of these players here. I think Dennis is driving so hard to get back in to defend the edge of the box. He just kind of overruns, and Armstrong's able just to cut in and then kind of throw him out of the game pretty quickly. But it's the look to the far post before he gets his head down to shoot. And that sends, I mean, I'm just going to actually watch it now as I'm talking, but I think it sends at least five Watford players, and also, or not including Dan Backman, to the right-hand side of the goal to try and block this shot. You know, you look at that replay again, watch everyone take a half step. Everyone's leaning to their left. Backman has to make a decision there. You know, he can't wait for the ball to be struck from that range to necessarily make a decision. If he's going to be proactive, he's got to be anticipating that. And, you know, nine times or more out of 10, you're going to see the player go for that far corner, and he just brushes it across back to the near post, and it's just a smart high football IQ goal as far as I can see. Yeah, I just that's just kind of my feeling. I don't know if you disagree with that or not, but
well, yeah, no, I do agree. I thought it was a very frustrating goal. I mean, why couldn't we just hold on for another few minutes? But yeah, they brought on the big guns, and it was a really good shot from Armstrong. And yeah, I think Backman, I know that it's easy to criticise him because people have been doing that and you kind of get sucked into it. But I thought that he had a good game, and, you know, he didn't have much that he could have done about that goal personally. But what about you, Tom?
Look, as we all know, I am the master of Dan Backman propaganda. But I thought, and this obviously isn't how it works, so I realise it's going to sound a little bit ridiculous, right up until that moment, which I don't think was an egregious error. I thought he had a really good game. I thought he looked calm. I thought he looked composed. I thought he came for crosses and caught them on a few occasions when he previously wouldn't. Punched a couple away when we really needed a big punch to clear. Made good saves. We expect that. Was calm and controlled in his distribution when it came back to him. And I don't think it was a big error. I think we've reached the point with Dan Backman where, you know, it's just Groundhog Day and every single goal that goes in has to be his fault because the narrative is so set now that he's a waste of oxygen that we have to go for him. Ideal world. You parry that one out for a corner or parry it away or hold it in the first place. I also think the angle that shot comes in on it and everything, I'm not sure what else he's meant to do. He makes the save. And as you say, Jordan, it's the little look from Armstrong. It's a really clever finish. No one's expecting him to go back across the face of goal like that. You know, expect him to bend it into the far corner. He's a right footer. It's a really well finished goal. So no, I'm not jumping on the damn Batman bandwagon. I thought he had a good day, and I think internally, if I was Valerian Ismail, I'd be pleased with him, and I would be saying, yeah, good job.
Good enough to get back his number one shirt.
I just don't think he will this season. I think. Oh, possibly ever, because it's become such a divisive topic and he's become almost bigger than the job now with the contracts and the captaincy and everything. I think it's really tricky to reintegrate him unless Backman is unavailable, but never say never.
Yeah, just watching the goal back now. I mean, no one expects him to have the presence of mind, the composure to do that late on. As you say, right foot, you're just expecting that top corner bend. And if you're going to criticise Backman for biting on that, then, I mean, you're criticising the whole back line there, everyone in the box, really. So, you know, I think if you're too harsh on Backman for that goal, I think, in my opinion, you're just underselling the goal and overselling the mistake that was made. I think there's been genuine criticism of Backman. I think you can debate on him quite heavily at the very least. I just think this one is quite conclusively not his fault, in my opinion, really. Maybe if anything, the parry, if you want to say it's a bad parry, back it out away from goal, which I don't even agree with. I think that's more of a problem than the actual finish. But yeah.
Okay, then we got to see Emmanuel Dennis, who had been signed in the week since we made the podcast. Although, actually, did we announce it on the podcast, didn't we? I think we did, yeah. So we were doing the podcast and it got announced and we were able to include it in the last one. And since then, he's been training with the guys. There was a nice little announcement video, which he seems like he can't go to any club without having that announcement video made about him. He got to get out on the pitch and get a few minutes against Southampton. What did we think? Do you reckon that it's a good signing? Will he be someone that can help us this season?
It's going to be really interesting, isn't it? Because if we get the Dennis that we got in the first half of the relegation season that scored the majority of those 10 goals and got the majority of those 6 assists, then you reasonably assume he could do some damage in the Championship. But I think we can't overlook the kind of baggage that goes around it and those reports that we've seen. And certainly I've been told by a couple of people that there is some substance to that, that he wasn't universally popular when he was here the first time around. The flip side of that is that a lot of those players have moved on. And, you know, if a rising tide lifts all ships, then hopefully the kind of improved character and attitude of the squad will drag him along in the right direction. Clearly he's not 100% sharp. I think, you know, what the mind wanted to do and the body could do were slightly detached on Sunday. And we also know that Ismail is very much a side over self coach. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily create the perfect opportunity for someone who can be a little bit individualistic at times. But you also need a sprinkling of that quality. And he has, you know, quality that not many players in this league probably have on their day. So it's going to be really fascinating to see how it works out. I hope, of course, that it kind of all falls into place and goes to plan. But it's going to be, I suspect, something we talk about a few times between now and the end of the season.
Jordan Val said that he's about 3 to 4 weeks away from being fit. And it did look that, to be honest, when he came out. He was sort of chasing the game, wasn't he? But do you believe that he can get back and, you know, be a real influence to this team?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I think he looked, yeah, he looked a bit over-eager to me. You know, there's a couple of moments where he was living up to the hype a little, or trying to live up to the hype a little bit, with a little cut back in his own half and try to beat players. And he did get outpaced, didn't he, on the counter at one point as well. He just didn't quite look there. But we've seen what he's capable of. In a higher division as well. You know, he's obviously a player that can be effective for us. He's a weapon that we didn't have this time last week. The team's certainly better off just from, you know, on paper, player for player, we're better off having him, you know, at the club. And I think he's a tool that Ismail would be quite pleased to have. It'd be interesting to see how he's used. You know, it'd be nice to see him from the start soon. I don't think it will be this week against Wednesday. I think it'll be a little bit later than that. As, you know, you touched on there, he's not quite at that match fitness yet. But no, I'm pleased to hear that. I think as we come to assess in the window as a whole, we'll probably get onto that in the next podcast. But, you know, Dennis is a good start. Unfortunately, the good start is quite late in the window if it's not the start and the end. But I think we're in a better position offensively than we were just a few days ago.
Tom, it seems like Val thinks that he's going to be best played on the wing rather than through the middle, which is what we thought he might be deployed as. It's also interesting about the comments that Val made about him, particularly in regards to his mentality, saying that he put a great mentality into the deal to make sure he can come to join us, and he's going to make a lot of sacrifice, which shows the big mentality, and that's why we're pleased that he's in. So really keen to highlight the fact that he likes his mental state.
Yeah, I tweeted this from my account at the time that the club put out the quotes from Val, which aren't necessarily what you're referencing here, but I think that was telling in and of itself, yeah, that they wanted to kind of get ahead of the game and kind of dictate the narrative a little bit and say, you know, he's a great guy. Val definitely wanted him. There's never going to be any question of an issue. Everything's great. Because it's not often that you hear from the coach when we sign a player until the kind of press go in before the next game and ask him about it. You know, the club don't often put out that kind of content. So I think there was something in that. And then obviously we got the quotes that he gave to the Watford Observer ahead of the Southampton game. But I think it was, you know, it was interesting that he was fairly kind of open about the fact that he wanted, that, or there was interest last summer, but he didn't feel he was the right fit because he wanted a certain type of number nine, which we all know. And I think that's why it makes sense that Dennis will play out wide. I don't think you can pretend there's a world in which he is the right sort of fit to play centre forward in a Valerian Ismail system, because he's not he's got upper body strength, but he's not that kind of big hulking centre forward in the way that we've seen Ismail teams before. And I think the kind of wide areas were somewhere that I wanted to add prior to the window. So I'm kind of pleasantly surprised that we've done it. I would still like to see additions in a couple of other areas. We'll get onto that, I'm sure. But yeah, it's, I'm happy with what we've kind of seen. I'm very interested about, we'll buy this idea that he's taken this massive pay cut. You know, that's presumably what he's referencing in sort of the showing the right attitude to come here. So, they're evidently very keen to kind of airbrush his or whitewash his reputation.
Hmm. Yeah. What's the story on that? Because it was quoted that he's taking a pay cut and he's going to be only paid 30%. But I don't quite understand how that works, because surely he has signed a contract that says he will get a certain amount of money and that will be paid to him, whether it's 70% from Nottingham Forest and 30% from Watford or whatever.
Well, I guess we don't know. I mean, there's two options. Either he's getting paid his full salary by Nottingham Forest and us paying 30%, or Forest has said, you're only going somewhere that's willing to pay your salary, as he was perhaps getting in Turkey. And he has, there's nothing stopping them agreeing him forfeiting 70% of his salary. It'd be an interesting decision on his part. It's possible that he said so in order to get the move. You know, Watford aren't willing to pay the full thing. He says, all right, the club can eat that part of my salary and I'll take the 30% Watford are willing to pay. I'm not entirely sure, but if that is the case, you know, that's quite a decision from him. But it is a little strange. It's not really been explained fully, has it?
Mm. Quite a big one. I mean, if he has done that, that is a real testament to his wanting to be here and get his career back on track again after a disappointing time at Forest. it speaks volumes about the character of somebody who, you know, has had bad attitude labelled on him. I mean, it's certainly a step in the right direction of having a good attitude, right?
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, the thing is, when it comes to Dennis's attitude in general, you know, I've heard similar things to Tom. You know, I've had people say that there have been issues with him at Watford in his previous spell. You know, maybe some of that's alleviated, as you say as well, Tom, by the coming and going of different coaches and players and so on. But this is a make or break 6 months for Dennis, really, in some ways. You know, his reputation has a little bit of that edge to it anyway. But even just from a footballing perspective, you know, he's only 26, but he's really kind of fallen from where his stock was just a couple of years ago. You know, obviously that move to Forest was, but hopefully for him, the next step forward. But it's ended up being, you know, a considerable step backwards from where he was just 2 or 3 years ago. If he wants to get himself back in the shop window, wants to give himself a chance of playing at a high level again consistently, that starts with a good spell here. You know, if he doesn't do well here, then you're kind of raising even more questions. So I think if he's serious about his career, which you'd imagine he is, you know, even making that move, it does show some level of intent, then you expect him to really be, you know, upping his game and looking to be as productive as he can be. And if you're ever going to get a coachable Emmanuel Dennis, it should be now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, cool. Tom?
I'm very cynical about that coming from Fabrizio Romano. I think, you know, he is someone who exists because of his relationship with agents and intermediaries. So if they want to put that message out there, what better mouthpiece to use than Romano? And, you know, he does what he's told so that he continues to get the stories that he does. But I think there's got to be something in it for this to be pushed so hard by kind of several parties now, whether the amount is right or, you know, it's off his basic or off bonuses, or, you know, are they giving him kind of less in a basic salary and they're going to make the rest up of it in bonuses so it's incentivized to play well and score and get assists and get wins for the team? You know, who knows? But someone put it to me, it's hard to disagree with this logic. If you weren't a Watford fan, would you take a 70% pay cut to your salary to play for Watford? I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, well, the reports say it is, so we'll take it at face value for the moment and wait for it to be disproved, I think is probably the best approach. Yeah, and I think we're all hoping that he can get back to his best because he was a real player for us when he was here in his first spell. During the game, guys, when we were winning, It was looking all great. Everyone was enjoying themselves. And then all of a sudden, some information started to filter through about the draw and that it was going to be an away trip to Liverpool. And people started to, I don't know, just care a little bit less about the final result. Tom?
I must admit, I had not seen the draw until after the game. My friend texted me. So,
okay. Fair enough.
I was kind of ignorant of that fact, but at full time, having been forced to a replay and then seen that, I was a bit, ugh.
Yeah. Jordan, could we do without the replay firstly? And secondly, if we do get for it, do we really want a game against Liverpool?
Yeah, replay is a nightmare. Going against Liverpool, look, why not? You know, it's obviously a tough game, but I'm not opposed to it, honestly. It's not, obviously it might kill your dreams of reaching the final again, but I'm not opposed to playing a big team personally away from home. I think it could be quite enjoyable. And I actually think there's probably a decent amount of fans that'd be pretty up for it as well. So yeah, I'm not too opposed.
Okay, cool. I mean, it would be very interesting to see how this team fares against the Premier League side, wouldn't it? I mean, clearly they're not, you know, one of the top teams in the Championship this season, but they're hopeful of getting in the playoffs, and I think we all believe that they can do if they get a run together. But against the Premier League side, that's a completely different opposition, and it'll be interesting to see how they fare. Although it might have been nice to see against maybe someone in the you know, the lower 10 rather than Liverpool. But I mean, yeah, we historically in recent history have done all right against Liverpool, so who knows.
Not at Anfield, we haven't.
Well, no, that's true, actually, yeah. Although there was the Tommy Mooney goal, wasn't there?
Yeah. I think we're stretching to say in recent years, though, there, aren't we?
Yeah, no, that's quite a long time ago, isn't it?
I'd rather that sort of fixture than another league counterpart in the Championship, personally. So let's just see if we have to worry about that or not. But I'm okay. I think it'd be relatively enjoyable, but we'll see.
Okay, then, shall we answer a couple of questions that we got in and then look towards Wednesday night, guys? We got one in from at Nascot Hornick, who asks, we've not kept a clean sheet since November, the 11th, I think. Will this be the reason we are not in a playoff place? Because we're not able to stop the goals going in our own net.
Yeah, I mean, it'll play a part for sure. I think defensively we've got some issues, obviously. Personnel-wise, consistency and just making some mistakes, but you know it's an area that we're not overly confident on still. I think we're not the most solid in terms of our position groups. You know, defensively, we've got some injury issues, some rotation. It's a tough one. You know, we're not a overly high scoring team, so it's a problem, but a problem that most teams around our level are facing, definitely.
Yeah, it will be, because ultimately we're not prolific goal scorers ourselves. We're kind of slap bang in the middle of the pack for goals conceded. So it's not, you know, the case of being dramatic problem. But I think we can all look back on games where we've seemingly been in control and then given up a silly goal and dropped 2 points. So sometimes I think you're better off losing a few and winning a few than drawing as many as we have. We had 10 draws, by the way, only behind Huddersfield on 13 draws. So there used to be one of the criticisms against kind of Ray Lewington, wasn't it, that we would draw too many and a few more wins and a few more losses and we'd actually be better off. So yeah, I think that's a valid point. And hopefully if we can tighten it up at the back in the next few weeks, then we may get a few more results, but it's definitely something that needs to be looked at.
Okay, then moving on, and we've got a fixture very quickly on the heels of this one. It's Sheffield Wednesday on Wednesday. What do we expect for this one? Changes, I imagine, but any changes that we might be surprised about, or do you think it will be pretty much the guys that didn't feature coming back in and as you were?
I think that's probably most likely at this point, yeah.
I think the big one's got to be what happens with Kone, right? If he came off with a calf thing he came off with, or a hamstring?
Oh, yeah, calf injury, yes. Calf injury, yeah, I did forget about the calf injury.
So obviously if he's missing, Kayembe's already missing.
Yeah, I guess it might depend on Tom Delibashiri's speed and recovery, ability to come back. I think if it is a calf injury, he obviously went off with a calf injury. If it's enough to take him off the pitch, then you would imagine he's not going to be fit on. If he plays on Wednesday, he's not fully fit. That's kind of where he's at. So it'll probably come down to, I imagine, a relatively late decision on that to see if he can play through it. How much of a risk it is to play through or not. But yeah, not great to come off with an injury like that with a game on Wednesday. He won't be training the next 2 days, I'd imagine, anyway.
So then is it? That's it. Is it Sierra, Holding, Chakvetadze, and Livermore?
I think. What do you do? I think you're probably looking at most.
Or do you go 4-2?
I think you probably look at. You probably try and get Dele Bashiru back in. If he can't, then I mean, yeah, it's a tough one. Yasser, Espria, and Chakvetadze just wouldn't really have that. That flexibility positionally and, you know, defensively, I don't think you'd be quite as comfortable there. You know, again, though, you are playing a Wednesday team where it might even benefit. It really depends how aggressive you want to be. You know, I think Livermore and Sirianni would be quite conservative. It's possible you might see a little bit of a change.
Oh, very conservative. Yeah, I'm just thinking who's actually played in midfield this season.
Yeah, I mean, the options we have are quite offensive.
Him and Livermore, it's not great, is it? In terms of going to a team that's struggling, you want to get someone that's going to get on the front foot.
Where does Greaves play?
More offensively. He could play in a number eight position, but he's more offensively minded. You know, you're looking, he's going to be favouring the attack like the Esprias and Chakvetadze. So, I mean, we saw Ince come on. It's possible he just puts Ince in there, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very possible, isn't it?
I very much imagine that a lot of it's going to be dependent on if they can force Kone through a game or get Tom Dele Bashiru back in time to get in there. I think it sounded like Dele Bashiru was missing just as a caution more than anything, right? Somewhat of a minor injury.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they'll probably go for that. But
well, after the Wednesday comes the Thursday, and not just any Thursday, it's transfer window deadline shutting Thursday, and as we're talking about a few players that are injured or possibly not able to feature on the Wednesday, does that come into the thinking of Val, or is he still really thinking about only one or two positions, if any, that he needs to fill?
I think the kind of issues are unchanged, really, for me. I would like to see another right back, but I don't think we will. I think left-sided centre-half is the one, and maybe another midfielder, but he's said kind of happy with midfielders and forwards. So I think if we do anything, it'll be that left-sided centre-half to provide some competition for, or backup at least, for Hoop. But then you suddenly end up with five centre-backs, and I suppose maybe it frees up Sierra to be considered a number six more often than he's considered a centre-half.
Yeah, Jordan, would you be dipping into the transfer window? Well, I suppose, yes, that's a different question, isn't it? Do you think they will dip into the transfer window?
I think I kind of tweeted about this earlier, but ideally this is a window where you're opportunistic and, you know, you lie on your feet, you take a deal if it comes up and you think it helps the team in the short term, in the immediate. You don't try and do long-term business here. We've discussed that a million times, but, you know, unfortunately our recruitment plan has been a bit of a let's hold on and see in January kind of where we are then, you know, what injuries we have, who's playing well, who's performing, who's not happy, who's going. You know, too much of our business revolves around January, and quite often we're quite unsuccessful with the players we bring in terms of how much they're going to play for us down the line. So, you know, I think our goal is to do as little as possible in January. Unfortunately, there are positions of need right now. You know, even the way we're discussing about this number eight, we are a bit short in some positions if we do have an injury. It depends what the goal is. If the real target is playoffs and we're serious about that, as some of the, you know, someone like Dennis would kind of imply that you're somewhat serious about trying to make that push, then you would be looking to help. But we've left it incredibly late. So I don't think we've done a good job of it. We'll see when it closes. But I think kind of my intuition right now is that it's going to be very similar to the previous windows of very little activity. But maybe we'll be wrong. I've seen a few rumours poking about left foot centre backs and so on. So potentially there'll be some movement there. But yeah, very hard to tell with Watford.
Okay, cool. I think that'll about do us for this week. Just before I go though, how would you guys like to hear a few lovely reviews that have come in?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Okay, so a 5-star review left by The Gauch or The Gosh. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce that, but excellent for Watford fans, knowledgeable and measured. Unlike many fan-based podcasts, there's no hysteria, excessive expectations, or pushing of unfounded agendas. Instead, you get informed analysis of the team and the games in an engaging manner. That's lovely. Very nice.
I'm glad that we've hidden our unfounded agendas as much as we have. Then that's good.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. How about another one? Because I'll treat you today. This one from Matthew Koo. Great Watford podcast. Really enjoy this. All three hosts are knowledgeable and talk well and intelligently, particularly like Jordan's tactical eye in an era of lots of mediocre fan content. This is top tier. Well done, guys, and look forward to more. Look at that, Jordan. A special mention for you as well.
Nice.
Well, clearly got great taste. very nice to hear that people are enjoying it. And obviously, as always, we try to talk about stuff that's, you know, relevant and interesting, and hopefully people will enjoy being or feeling part of the conversation, because we like hearing from you guys too. I would like us to get a few more questions as well going forwards. Again, we generally do a pretty good job of that, but we need to engage with everyone a little bit more. But yeah, really nice to hear. So thanks for the reviews as always.
Yeah, thank you very much, Matthew Koo and The Gauche. If you would like to join them, it's very easy to do so, and we'd love to read them out on the pod. Just go to iTunes, type in Watford Buzz Podcast, or just go to Google, type in Watford Buzz Podcast iTunes. You'll find us there. Go down to the bottom and give us a rating out of 5 and leave a little comment, and we'll read it out on the show. Whether it's good or bad, we'll read it out.
And if someone has made it this far, again, to the end of the podcast, which there must be just one or two of you right now, we did go through a phase of asking people what they do whilst they listen to the podcast. And if we do have any new listeners or people that didn't reply the first time, I am still curious what you're doing as you're listening to this podcast, because, yeah, we've had some good ones so far. So if you're still here, let us know you're still here by telling us.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Jordan. And thanks very much, everyone, for listening. We'll be back hopefully this week if we can do so. If not, it will be after the Cardiff game on the Saturday. So we'll be probably bringing something out this time next week. But we'll see if we can get something, a special transfer special out. Hopefully that Watford help us out there by doing something, so we have something to talk about. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this one. We'll be back very, very soon. From Matt, from Tom, and from Jordan, we've been the Watford Buzz Podcast. See you next time. Bye-bye.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.